Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey everybody, it is Wednesday, May 17th, 2023. Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast, where we're waiting for the 50-year storm. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, joined by Michael F. Floyer. We're in studio today, so we got specialists over there. Give yourselves a round of applause. We appreciate all your help, as always, and we appreciate all of you guys listening each and every week. And, well, Florio, it's mid-May. How many best ball drafts have you done?
Probably more than I should admit. I've done, like, close to 10, I want to say. But okay. This is what I do. I do a lot of slow ones so that, like, they don't take up my time, but then I can, like, go back and look through them and probably maybe a little bit less than that, but... Yeah, I always like having a slow one going on just because, like, when I'm bored, it gives me something to look at.
I also feel like if you do a slow, and I've only done maybe a handful, probably, you know, 4 or 5. I also feel like if you're doing slow ones, it prevents you from maybe overloading on them.
Yes.
You know?
I like to have, like, 2 slow ones going, and then anything more than that, I'm like, why am I doing this?
I mean, it's
myself?
Basically like, you know, taking the ice cream and scooping it in a cup as opposed to just sitting there with the whole tub and a spoon in your hand sort of thing. So that's kind of where it is. We're not talking best ball drafts today, though. We are kind of diving in to some rankings. Florio's rankings are up over at NFL.com. You can go check those out at fantasy.nfl.com. And we're going to compare them with the consensus for a handful of players. It's May, so we'll do it here. We'll do it, maybe try to do it once a month. We'll kind of catch up and see kind of where things are as everybody sort of adjusts and more people start drafting and that sort of thing. But we'll kind of go through a handful of guys for this one. Also play a little bit of Hype Train or Smokescreen. And Florio's Film Festival continues because Fast X is coming out this week. We wanted to go back and watch Point Break. I know on the surface it doesn't seem like it makes sense. We'll explain when we get a little bit later on in the show. But
I don't think we can fully explain how hyped as a collective podcast we are for the Fast. Like, I feel like every conversation that me and you have had the last, like, week ends up going back to the Fast movies.
I mean, just peek behind the curtain. After last week's show, we finished recording and then we all stayed here in the Fantasy Lounge for probably another 15, 20 minutes
just talking about
the entire series, breaking it down. We've got Susie now, who just joined the group. She admitted she hadn't seen any of them, but she was super hyped to, like, start watching them after us talking about how ridiculous they were.
Have you watched any of them?
She hasn't watched any of them yet. Okay.
This is your next plan now.
This might have to be the next thing on the show where we every week ask Susie if she's watched a new one and we can get her
one
take.
One per week.
Like,
every...
you know, just get her take on what, you know, what she thinks of them as they get more and more ridiculous all the way to Fast X. You know, maybe we'll just do a Fast X special, like a special pod.
The whole pod should go together to watch
We should just make a whole thing of it and go watch Fast X.
Record us watching it or something like that. I mean, the movie there would be cool with it.
Because, you know, that would be something that a family would do.
Ooh,
you like that?
See what you did there.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk some football before everybody clicks this thing off. What is a little bit of Hype Train or Smokescreen? Last week, I called this section chatter because it's the kind of thing where you're hearing coaches and GMs and players say things and they don't necessarily have any news value, but it's something to talk about because it's May and, like, there are no football games. We're as far away pretty much from the Super Bowl as we are from week one. So this week, a handful of headlines, and we can determine whether or not they are hype trains or smoke screens and kind of kick these around a little bit. The first one, Saints general manager Mickey Loomis says he believes Michael Thomas can still be a 100-catch receiver. Now, it's been a couple of years since we have seen Michael Thomas in earnest on the field. Injuries have really hampered him over the last couple of seasons. He has not looked anything like the guy that we saw, you know, set an NFL record for receptions a few years ago. But the Saints did bring him back, albeit on a much smaller salary. Mickey Loomis still believes, at least he says he still believes. Is this a hype train or a smokescreen?
I'm going to say this is a smokescreen, because to catch 100 passes, you're going to need to play a full season. And Michael Thomas has played 10 games in the last 3 years combined. I actually saw a tweet the other day. I don't remember who sent it out, but it was like, we are coming up on the 3-year anniversary of Michael Thomas's ankle injury that was supposed to sideline him a week.
Wow.
10 games in 3 years. But that being said, if Michael Thomas, if you like were able to inject like Wolverine blood into him or something like that, and we're like, he is going to play the full allotment of games this season, I would then say this is a hype train. Like, I think Michael Thomas could still play at a high level. And what I love is his ADP in certain best ball websites right now is insanely low. Like, he's the wide receiver 45. That's crept up a little bit. It used to be outside the top 50, but like, at that price, and we're talking, what, he goes in like the 8th, 9th, 10th round, something like that. I see it as a pick worth taking a gamble on.
I think at the ADP, I think it's absolutely worth taking a gamble on. What I don't think, I still think, even if he's completely healthy and gives you, heck, not even 17 games, let's say he gives you 14 or 15 games, I just don't think it's going to happen, just because I don't know if Derek Carr can support a couple of 100 catch receivers, right? And I am of the belief, I think a lot of people are, that Chris Olave has cemented himself as the number one option in that passing game now, which means you're going to feed him a lot of targets, give him a lot of opportunities. I think 100 catches for Chris Olave is very much in the cards this year. I don't know that you're going to have 200 catch receivers in New Orleans. Also factor in, you know, now that you look, yes, Alvin Kamara is probably going to be suspended, but it's not going to be a full season. Yeah. He's going to come back and play. He's going to get his opportunities. We'll talk a little bit about Juwan Johnson probably later in the show. He's going to get some shots. There are just other guys you have to spread the ball around to, and I don't know that Derek Carr can support that many guys. So I appreciate Mickey Loomis trying to hype up Michael Thomas and believe in him. I think his 100 catch days are probably behind him at this point.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And your point on Derek Carr, I think, is a really good one, because the only time we've seen Carr have two like high-end receivers was with Crabtree and Cooper. Mm-hmm. And remember how frustrating it was with Cooper? Like, yeah. Crabtree was his guy that he'd consistently go to. And then Cooper was like, did he catch a long touchdown or no? And it was so boom or bust. I could kind of see that being how the Saints offense shakes out as well.
Yeah, I just don't know that Derek Carr has that in him. I don't know if he ever did, but I certainly don't think he has it at this point in his career. Down in Baltimore, I guess up in Baltimore if we're going from New Orleans, right? I know geography. Ravens offensive coordinator Todd Monken says he is looking to lighten quarterback Lamar Jackson's quote-unquote burden, because he has a whole bunch of offensive weapons now. They go and sign Odell Beckham Jr. They draft Zay Flowers. They have a new offensive identity. At least they hope they have a new offensive identity. Now, the caveat to this is Monken also sort of followed up by saying, we don't want to, you know, completely take away all the things that make Lamar who he is. But I do think they want this offense to be a little bit more pass-heavy. I think Lamar is a good passer. I don't know if he's a great passer, but he's a good passer. Any concerns about him in terms of what his fantasy potential could be if they really do change the style of offense they're playing in Baltimore?
No, I actually think it can only help Lamar Jackson. I think their offense has become way too predictable, and it's become, if you can limit Lamar Jackson on the ground, you're probably going to do pretty well at slowing this offense down. Todd Monken, I looked back at his what he did in college, and it was pretty split with pass and run. But what I liked is it was a lot of deep passes and explosive plays. And then you go back to what he did before he was with Georgia, when he was with Tampa Bay in the NFL, a lot more three wide receiver sets. And I think that this is the offense the Ravens have built. I think we're going to see a lot less two tight end sets, with Mark Andrews obviously being the number one tight end. And then we're going to see Bateman and Odell and Zay Flowers all out there, which is going to make it easier for Lamar as a passer. One, the talent is better than it's ever been, I would say, from the pass catching group. And two, it's just going to be harder to predict. And it's not going to be as vanilla as it has been. And when you have a passing game that you have to respect, I think it then creates running lanes for Lamar Jackson. So my thinking is, like, even if he dials back the running a little bit, could we see it be more efficient than it has been the last couple of years? Plus, I naturally expect his passing numbers to jump up. He's ranked as my QB4. I cannot quit that 2019 season where I know he didn't score the most fantasy points ever, but that was the best fantasy season a quarterback's ever had. Like, if he doesn't sit that last game, he does set the record. He was by far the most fantasy points per game ever. I just can't quit the Lamar upside.
I'm with you. I've got him as my QB4 as well. In fact, I was in a mock draft last night with Bob Harris and the guys over at Football Diehards. And I went, you know, this is the time of year to kind of play with things, play with ideas. I took Mark Andrews in the second, and I'm sitting there. I had taken Jamar Chase, number two overall. I took Mark Andrews in the second, and I'm thinking, okay, this way I can stack him with one of the two quarterbacks, right? I can either stack him with Joe Burrow, stack him with Lamar Jackson. And so I'm waiting, and I'm watching this whole thing happen, and Josh Allen's gone, and Jalen Hurts is gone, and it's coming up, and Patrick Mahomes is still there, and Lamar Jackson's there, and I'm like, I really want to stack a quarterback, but I don't want to. I'm not going to take Lamar or Joe Burrow ahead of Patrick Mahomes. And so two picks before me, Mahomes went, and that just gave me the green light to go and get Lamar as QB4, because I'm sort of with you. I think even if the rushing numbers come down, ideally the passing yardage comes up. Maybe the passing touchdowns come up. Here's what. Can Lamar Jackson get to 3,500 passing yards? Because that's a number he's never hit in his career. Could he do it this year?
Yes, because of the receiving talent he has around him. I think in the past, I mean, let's remember, like, last year, their one after Bateman got hurt was DeMarcus Robinson. And there's years where, like, Willie Snead has been a top two target for this team. Like, it's been pretty bad. I don't think he's ever had an assortment of weapons quite like this. So I definitely think he can get there, but it is insane that that is a number that Lamar Jackson has never reached, like, in today's NFL.
I'm looking, and the year Lamar won the MVP, 2019, that was his career high. He passed for 3,100 and change. He had how many touchdowns? 36 touchdowns. These were his pass catchers. I mean, he had Mark Andrews, who led the team in targets. You had Marquise Brown, who was a rookie. Mind you, Andrews was only in his second season. You had Marquise Brown, who was a rookie. Willie Snead was the number three pass catcher on that team with a whopping in yards. Snead was fourth. Your number three in terms of yards was Hayden Hurst at 349.
What are we doing here?
349.
He won an MVP with that cast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so you're right. I mean, this is definitely a better collection of talent. And so hopefully, if there is anything that is lacking in rushing yards, and it wouldn't be a surprise, it sort of fills in the gaps with the passing numbers there. So we'll see. In Carolina, Bryce Young starts OTAs as the QB2 behind Andy Dalton. Okay, let's just all admit this is a smokescreen, right? This is an absolute smokescreen. How long until this just flip-flops and we just stop the charade?
It should be today. like, at least I'm hoping by the time, like, training camp starts and stuff, because I know the whole thing of, like, coaches want their rookies to earn it and all of that. I get it. But, like, we know who Andy Dalton is at this point. We know that, like, if you gave truth serum to Frank Reich right now, he would tell you Bryce Young is our week one starter. So do everything you can to get him as ready as you can for week one. And I know some people will downplay it and stuff, but, like, let's go back a couple years ago when Trevor Lawrence was giving away half of his first team reps to Gardner Minshew. Mm-hmm. And we were all like, what are we doing here, right? Urban Meyer? Like, we know that this is the guy. To me, not only do I think it's valuable just to get the rookie as comfortable as you can, but you want him on the same page with his receivers. And the more that people play together, the better chemistry they have. And I'm a firm believer that unless you have, like, a proven veteran quarterback, like the Mahomes and Alex Smith situation or something like that, you don't learn from osmosis. You can't learn a whole lot, I think, from sitting on the bench. So to me, you want to play these rookies. Get Bryce Young out there with the ones as soon as possible.
Well, I think the point, too, that you may just want to emphasize is that it's not like he's going to be sitting behind some MVP-type quarterback, right? Andy Dalton has had a nice career, and he had some nice seasons, but the end is coming for Dalton very soon. He's not the same guy that he was all those years in Cincinnati. So it doesn't make sense for Bryce Young to sit behind him. Like somebody made the point, I can't remember who, but you know, talking about, for instance, Lamar Jackson even. He came in and he was behind Joe Flacco, but this was a Joe Flacco that was still playing at a high level in Baltimore, a guy who had won Super Bowls for the Ravens, and they were sort of using Lamar Jackson as kind of a, he had his own little special package. It was kind of a gadget player when they you know, first brought him in there. Eventually he took over. This ain't that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if this was just a way to show deference to a veteran, if it's a way to remind a rookie that he is a rookie, but stop the insanity. Like, we all know better than this. Like, let's just move on, Frank Reich.
I bet you if you asked Andy Dalton right now, do you think you could beat out Bryce Young? And I know athletes are always going to believe in themselves and stuff, but if he was being honest, I bet you even Andy Dalton's like, nah, I know I'm the backup.
I mean, I think everybody understands, right? Like, you don't, you know, you trade up to get the number one pick. You spend a lot of assets to get this number one pick. You're not all of a sudden just going to say, hey, you know what? How about you sit for a year? Like, that's just not, it's not going to happen, like, at all. In Denver, Sean Payton says he is, quote, hopeful Javonte Williams is ready for training camp, saying he doesn't think, or he hopes at least, that Williams will not start on the PUP. I mean, this was more than just an ACL. This was a pretty severe knee injury for Javonte Williams. And the rumor mill, now mind you, you know, we don't know how much truth there is in it, has had a wide range of outcomes for Javonte Williams, to he's ready to go in week one, to he could miss a good chunk of the year. So, I mean, that's a huge, huge swing there. In terms of Sean Payton saying he thinks, you know, or hopes that Williams can avoid the PUP, hype train or smoke screen, and where are you willing to take Javonte this year?
I think that's a hype train. We've seen backs come back sooner from the ACL. Obviously, the one that is always in my mind is Adrian Peterson running for 2,000 after 9 months, but I don't expect that from anyone else. But I think Javonte at week one will be, what he tear in like week three or week four last year?
It was pretty early in the year.
So I think he'll be close to 100%. My concern is always the first year back from an ACL. Players usually don't look themselves. And part of it is mental. Like, a lot of the times when you hear athletes talk about it, they're like, I need to know that I can fully trust my knee again. Johnny Utah had to learn the hard way that you need to be patient. but I like Javonte at his ADP. RB29 going like pick 90 overall. To me, you're not taking a whole lot of risk by taking him there. But if he starts to climb, and I think he's someone that could climb if he starts to be on the practice field this summer, because everyone always loves to hype up Javonte Williams, then I'd be out on him. But as a borderline top 30 running back, I think he's a good option if you wait on running backs.
Again, he's sort of another one, kind of like we talked about with Michael Thomas, where the ADP is such that I don't know that there's a ton of risk. I think the risk has been sort of baked in to what his ADP is, and so that makes it, I think, worth a shot. And look, if you take a swing on him later in a draft and he really does turn out to be there for week one and ready to go, then maybe you end up with something. And if it doesn't work out, then you haven't really risked a whole lot of draft capital. I did sort of, you know, smirk. I think it was Mike Kliss, who was one of the Broncos beat writers, talking about you know, guys coming back off ACLs, and how even for a lot of ACL guys, like this, we're talking about, what, 9-10 months, I think it is, between Javonte's injury and him coming back. And the name that popped up was Adrian Peterson, how he was able to come back and be amazing. And I'm like, yes, that is true. That's also not really the example you want, because Adrian Peterson at that point in his career and his life was a superhuman. And I think if that's the standard we're going to hold somebody to, then I think we're going to sort of be disappointed. I do think we sort of look at it more in the lines of the average player. And you mentioned it. It takes a good year to come back. I mean, what, Saquon Barkley? It took him a solid year to kind of look like Saquon again after that ACL injury. We're talking about a guy who was a, quote, generational running back and looked like an absolute monster out there when he was healthy. So I would tend to draft with caution, but if for whatever reason Williams turns out to be more AP than Saquon, then you got yourself a bonus right there. In Washington, Ron Rivera says he believes Antonio Gibson can still play a key role. You probably hear the exasperation in my voice. Hype train or smokescreen?
Only because of ADP, I'm going to say hype train.
Okay.
I still think Antonio Gibson could be useful if used the right way as a pass-catching running back, someone who you could mix in there. But again, this all goes back to ADP. Like, I saw someone on Twitter being like, when are fantasy people going to stop falling for Antonio Gibson? And I think the ADP indicates that we kind of have.
Right.
Like, he's the RB42 going at pick 130 overall. We're talking about a double digit, someone you can get in like the 12th round, something like that. And if we're talking Washington running backs, I would greatly rather have Gibson at that price than Brian Robinson, who still goes outside the top 100. It's pretty wild that neither of them go in there. But to me, Robinson is the one that I think could be more useful on the ground, whereas I think Gibson could catch more passes. I'm not crazy about either one of these running backs at all, but just as like a late round dart throw, I'm fine taking a gamble on Antonio Gibson.
I'm calling smokescreen on this one. It was when I saw the headline. It was the Grand Theft Auto meme, the aw bleep, here we go again. I mean, that's kind of how I felt when I saw that. Because I remember a couple years ago, I think it might have been when they first got Antonio Gibson, pretty early in his career, Ron Rivera referred to him as a Christian McCaffrey type player, which I have learned now that basically for Ron Rivera, any running back who can catch passes, he refers to as a Christian McCaffrey type player. And it's like, bro, no, it doesn't work like that. And if they really were going to get Gibson more involved, it feels like they could have done that. Now, maybe the difference this year is that you've got Eric Bieniemy there, right? And he's the guy calling plays, and you know, maybe things change a little bit. But you've had ample opportunity to get Antonio Gibson heavily involved in this offense. Not only did you not get him involved, you went out and drafted a guy. You drafted another guy to play his position and you gave him snaps over Gibson. So at some point, you know, sure, I'm sure this is what you want. There are a lot of things that I want, but that doesn't mean they're going to happen. I can't buy into this. And you're right. The ADP, the RB42 situation for Gibson sort of suggests that we've all heard this song before from Ron Rivera and people aren't buying it at this point. Last one. This from Detroit. Reports were that Sam LaPorta was, quote, the best player on the field, apparently the best player on the field by a wide margin in Lions rookie minicamp. This feels like absolute hype train, but like in a smokescreen sort of way, if that makes sense.
I agree. I was going to say there's no way he was the best player if Jahmyr Gibbs was on the field because, I mean, Gibbs is, in my opinion.
Although Gibbs did have that ankle injury.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. Maybe.
So, okay, if you take Gibbs off the field, then I could believe this. Of their rookies, the one that they took second highest is probably going to be the best one. I could believe that. LaPorta is someone that I'm not interested in drafting because rookie tight ends, especially the first few weeks of the season, usually it's very bumpy for them. But I could see LaPorta being, if you want to take him as like a late pick as your second tight end, cool, but I could see him being someone that hits off the waiver wire because the Lions are so thin at tight end.
Yes,
that I think that just by default he could be out there getting targets on a team that their offense was very fantasy friendly last year. So especially once you get Jameson Williams back and you have him and Amon-Ra taking so much defensive attention away, that could create just, you know, open short underneath targets for LaPorta, especially in the second half of the season.
So here are the tight ends on the depth chart behind Sam LaPorta, who right now he's listed on some places as the number one tight end. The guys behind him, Brock Wright, James Mitchell, Shane Zylstra, Derek Deese Jr. and Patrick Murtaugh. Stop me when there's somebody there you want to draft.
I know a few of those names because of that helps no one.
You know what? Yeah, there are some That Helps No One All-Stars in that. I'm pretty sure Shane Zylstra made it at least once, probably multiple times.
I think there was a week where it was multiple Lions tight ends.
I think so.
Where all the That Helps No One players.
I think you are correct there. So there's a very good chance Laporta is the number one guy there. I still think, you know, this is one where we as a group have to kind of pump the brakes on this, like hearing that he was the best player on the field in rookie minicamp. Like, okay, maybe he was. I don't think we need to translate that into, hey man, let's pump Sam Laporta up AD up draft boards right now. So I think that's maybe sort of where we have to kind of, you know, take a pause a little bit. Speaking of taking a pause, we're going to do that, take a quick break, come back. We will dive into some rankings and we'll also go hang out with Johnny Utah and Bodie on the beach. That's coming up next here on the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Let's talk some rankings. You can go check out Michael F. Florio's fantasy rankings at fantasy.nfl.com. So I felt like it was going to be fun to kind of compare and contrast some of his with some of the consensus that you can find all across the interwebs. So let's start at the top because, look, there are three quarterbacks that are at the top of everyone's list. The order is somewhat interchangeable. Patrick Mahomes. The consensus has him at quarterback one. You have him at quarterback three. And this isn't like a, hey, you're crazy, what's wrong with you? Again, you can sort of shuffle around Mahomes, Hurts, and Allen in any sort of order. But I just kind of wanted your take on why you've got him at three instead of one. I know it's splitting hairs. I was just curious your thought process.
Yeah, exactly what you said. I always say like you could put these three in any order. You could call me biased, but my thinking with Josh Allen is he was the QB1 2 years ago. He was the QB1 the season before this last one. And then he was the QB1 for the first half of the season before he got hurt his elbow. He was also on pace. If he played that Bengals game, he was going to become the first quarterback ever in history with back-to-back 400 fantasy point seasons. My logic there is he gives you similar numbers as Mahomes through the air, but he's going to run a whole lot more. And that's also with Jalen Hurts. Like, I know Hurts isn't going to give you quite the passing numbers that Mahomes is, but he's going to give you even better rushing numbers than Josh Allen. And to me, my thinking is I feel like I can trust the rushing production a little bit more if the Chiefs have, because they underwent a complete philosophy change last year, and Mahomes went from being like the quarterback who 2 years ago was like, why can't I throw the ball deep every single play, to breaking the NFL record for short yards touchdown passes. So to me, I'm like, hey, if some of those quick passes near the goal line become handoffs to Pacheco or something, and it doesn't have to be a whole lot, four of them will completely change everything, you know? So to me, again, there's no wrong order, but I just felt like the other two, because of what they give you with their legs, just feel a little bit safer to me.
That's kind of where I am, too, because I've got Allen 1, Hurts 2, Mahomes 3. We talked about having Lamar Jackson at 4. And it is just, it feels like the guys who run a little bit more have a little bit of a safer floor in terms of what their production can be. And like, this isn't a knock on Mahomes. I mean, the guy threw for 5,200 yards, had 40 touchdowns last year. There's no reason to think he can't do that again. And he runs enough that, you know, it definitely adds something to it, right? He had, 350 yards, 4 rushing touchdowns last year. That number certainly is attainable again this year. So, again, like, if you came to me and you said you had Patrick Mahomes number one and Josh Allen number three, you know, I'm not going to shout at you about it. I just, you know, I just was curious about your particular personal thought process there. Anthony Richardson, consensus is at QB10. You have him at QB13. Not a huge gap between you, but it is the difference between drafting him as a QB1 and not drafting him as a QB1. I mean, you've got him at 13. That means he's just outside that range of QB1. What for you made the difference?
I think right now is heavily skewed by best ball this early in the process. Mm-hmm. And in best ball, sure, I have no problem taking him at QB10 because you don't need to pick when you start him. You're just going to get those big blow-up weeks. But if we're talking redraft, and that's what my rankings are, like the quarterbacks I have him behind then are Aaron Rodgers, who I have at 12. I could see myself bumping him up ahead of Rodgers. But Dak and Tua, I think that's where I draw the line, because if you take Anthony Richardson at QB10, now all of a sudden you're starting him week 1. And I don't think people are going to feel confident enough to do that. I think he has the upside to finish QB10 overall, but I don't rank players based on like where I think they're going to finish. I'm not trying to win the accuracy contest or anything like that. I am telling you this is how I would draft them. And I feel much more comfortable with Anthony Richardson as my QB2, especially if I don't get one of the top 8, pairing him up with like a Tua or a Dak or a Watson. I love doing that. If you take him at QB10, though, you're saying he's my starting quarterback. And I think that puts a lot more pressure on your team, on I know Richardson doesn't feel the pressure, but you know, he has to perform that.
He feels pressure, but for a different, like, yeah, not, exactly. Not from us geeks here, just from, you know, from the whole, hey, I'm supposed to lead a franchise sort of thing there. And I think with Richardson, the comparisons you keep getting, not maybe in terms of style, but in terms of his fantasy potential, is that he could be what Justin Fields was, what Jalen Hurts was a couple of years ago, and that guy who, even if he still needs work on his passing game, and look, the reports early are that he's very impressive throwing the football there in Indianapolis, but even if he still needs work, that he can still provide for you because of his rushing upside. Trey Lance was another one there, right? But at the same time, last year, people weren't really drafting Justin Fields to be their QB1, outside of like Adam Rank, right? Like nobody was drafting him to be their QB1. They were drafting him as an option with upside. Same with Jalen Hurts. I mean, 2 years ago, I had Jalen Hurts and Dak Prescott, and it ended up being a struggle every week to figure out which one of those guys I was going to start because they were both giving me pretty good production. So you're right. If you're talking about, you know, say dynasty leagues or keeper leagues, redraft leagues, drafting Richardson as the QB10 and thinking, hey, I'm going to plug this guy in as my starter every week, does open you up to some more vulnerability and some more risk as opposed to drafting him as a second quarterback and then riding it out if he turns out to be somebody better, even better than what we think he can be.
And if you take him at QB10 and he finishes a QB10, okay, if you take him at 13, he finishes at 10, you feel good about that. And like you get some return on your investment. And we say all the time there's like a top 8 quarterbacks, I think. If you take him at 10, he really doesn't have anywhere to go, like upwise.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Which, you want to talk about drafting somebody at their ceiling, we'll get into that in a little bit. Trey Lance, and this one is interesting to me. The consensus has him at QB24. You have him at QB33. And I think what's really interesting is that Brock Purdy, the consensus has at QB28. Is this just a best ball thing right now with Trey Lance?
I think it's a best ball thing. I think it is a fantasy players are, they hold on to their priors like no tomorrow. Like they, people want to be right on Trey Lance. And I've been very vocal that I'm not super high on Brock Purdy. I think last year he played very well, but I think like if you put Sam Darnold in this system, he could play very well. I think a lot of quarterbacks could play very well in this system given the weapons they have and everything. Trey Lance for fantasy would be the best case scenario because of he could give you that production with his arm and with his legs. But read the tea leaves. Like, and again, I'm saying all of this as the low Brock Purdy guy. I have him as QB21 in my rankings because it doesn't matter what I think. What matters is what the team is going to do. And the team has been very vocal that if he is healthy, Brock Purdy is going to be the starter. At least maybe things change in camp. Maybe Purdy doesn't look as good as he did at post-surgery. I don't know. But as of right now, everything the Niners are saying is that they want Brock Purdy to be their starter.
That's sort of it. And I think there's sort of that, there's enough ambiguity in there that I think people are sort of looking for the silver lining in it.
Yeah.
Because, and we talked about this before, lots of other people have talked about it too. There's so much unknown still about Trey Lance, right? This is his resume so far. We saw him get occasional opportunities as a rookie. And then when he got the chance to be the starter, he played one game in a monsoon. Then the second game, he got hurt. So we really haven't seen him. So there's still this belief. There's this belief in his upside and what he can be. And so I think people are sort of holding on to that. And, you know, throw in the fact that nobody knows exactly when Brock Purdy is going to be ready. Nobody wants to buy into Sam Darnold because we've seen that movie, right? We sort of know how it is. And even with Kyle Shanahan, I think we understand there's a ceiling there. So I think there's still sort of that hope, that belief in what Trey Lance can be. It's such a black box there.
What scares me with Trey Lance is he's lost so many years of development because not only has he made 4 starts in 2 years in the NFL, but his last year in college was taken away because of COVID. He played one game that year. So Michael Thomas has played more football in the last 3 years than Trey Lance has. That is a concern.
That is a little bit of a concern. Yeah, he's played very, very little football. And, you know, a lot of it is out of his control, unfortunately, but the window does seem to be closing on what his opportunity can be. Over to running backs, Bijan Robinson. Consensus has him at 2. You have him at 5. Either way, we're talking about drafting him very high. RB2 feels like the absolute ceiling for Bijan. Like that seems like a hard bar to live up to, even for somebody that we think is going to be amazing this year.
Yeah, and so when I was doing the rankings, Bijan was all the way at the bottom to start, and I put him up at RB2, and I was like, CMC is my one for me. And I've seen people say, you know, shouldn't be a lock for RB1, but my thinking is always, what running back gives me the highest odds of not only being the RB1, but of being top 5? And CMC and Eckler, highest odds of any running back. Like if Eckler's back with the Chargers and obviously McCaffrey with the Niners, to me, they're untouchable as my top 2 running backs. Then I was like Bijan or Saquon. And I could sell you that Bijan could be better. Same thing for Jonathan Taylor. But I just think the floor is safer with the veterans because Arthur Smith, yes, he's going to run the ball a whole lot, but how much is Tyler Allgeier going to get? You know, like there's some concerns of the unknown with Bijan. And yes, I get it. The unknown upside is always fun. I feel like people always want to be first on a player. But like, I don't know. If I drafted Saquon and he finished a little bit behind Bijan, I wouldn't feel nearly as bad as if it was the other way around. Like if I was like, I let the proven elite talent in Saquon fall because I wanted the unknown upside. I don't know. To me, it just felt safer.
It does feel safer. I totally get it. I mean, and maybe this is us hesitating, right? Like I think we've all as a group gotten better about not, you know, like once upon a time you talked about drafting a rookie this high and people would be like, he's never played a down of football.
Yep.
We've gotten past that as a society, right? We have seen too many rookies, whether it was Ezekiel Elliott or Saquon Barkley, or you know, I'm sure there are other guys out there that I'm blanking on right now. We've gotten over that now, so we're used to drafting rookies highly. This though, and maybe this is me sort of still holding on to a tiny bit of that. You're drafting him at RB2. You are essentially saying I guarantee he's going to finish as a top 5 running back. And as you mentioned, look, I don't think Tyler Allgeier is going to have a huge role, but it could be just enough. Cordarrelle Patterson, not going to have a huge role, but still going to partially be involved. They still do have to throw the ball occasionally, maybe not as much as we like. There are other places to go with it. So I had a little bit of pause when I saw Bijan at RB2. Admittedly, I think I have him as my RB4 or 5 right now. So I haven't fully jumped off the cliff, but you know, I just got my heels kind of hanging on the edge of it at this point.
Right. You now. Haven't fully jumped out of the plane. You
Not mean. Fully out of the plane yet. And I still have a parachute. unlike Johnny Utah. Yeah, we're getting to that. Dalvin Cook, consensus RB21. You've got him at RB12. The only difference I can think is that I guess people are concerned about where he may land if he stays in Minnesota or somewhere else. But I don't know. I'm kind of with you in the sense that wherever he goes, he's still a good running back who's going to get a lot of opportunity somewhere.
And the thinking continues to be like the Vikings are going to move on, but I'm like, are they? They went through free agency and they didn't bring in running backs. They went through the draft and they took Dwayne McBride in like the fifth round or something like that. Or did I get his name wrong? I don't even. But yeah, like they didn't put anything into a running back outside of paying Alexander Mattison backup running back money. And to me, I get that there's a potential out in his contract, but then there's a lot of dead cap with it and stuff. Part of me thinks that they're just going to run it back with Dalvin Cook this year. And after the draft, my thinking changed a lot. So that's why I have him back at 12. And if he is there in Minnesota, or like you said, if someone else takes on that big contract, I think they're going to give him a whole lot of work. The only thing that gave me some pause was yesterday. I think the Vikings put out like their schedule. Like
I was gonna say, did you see this? You know, he's been erased from the team mural now.
He was not on it, and that worried me. That what I was like, okay, maybe I should lower him.
I mean, you know, right now this is very much decipher things from cryptic social media season. I mean, if you want to read into that, that does suggest that the Vikings are sort of ready to move on from him. But the question is, can they find a trade partner right now? Because teams aren't, they're not, they haven't started that next round of running back free agency, right? I mean, think about the guys that are still, Ezekiel Elliott is still out there. Leonard Fournette's still out there. Kareem Hunt is still out there. Those guys could probably give you good sort of backup moments, good snaps, backup snaps, for a little bit less of an investment. If you're trading for Dalvin Cook, you're going to have to give up probably some draft picks, some kind of assets there. You might be able to go out for now and get one of these free agents off the street for a little bit cheaper. So it might be hard, at least in the short term, for the Vikings to move a guy like Dalvin Cook. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get to week one and he's still on the roster. Now, maybe before the trade deadline something happens. I don't know. But I think he's going to still be there.
If you're looking to trade for a running back two right now, I would rather have Austin Eckler than Dalvin Cook. He's cheaper. He's a shorter contract. Like, I just think it's going to be hard to move that running back contract.
No, I agree. I completely agree there. Terry McLaurin, wide receiver 26 by consensus. You have him at wide receiver 18. Similarly, Jahan Dotson's wide receiver 42. You've got him at 35. Is this just because you love Sam Howell?
No, it's because I love Terry McLaurin, and I'm never going to quit Terry McLaurin. I believe Terry is a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL. He's just had terrible quarterback play. The thing that gives me hope is not just Sam Howell, it's that Jacoby Brissett is there, and Brissett played really good football last year. He had Amari Cooper being a top 10 wide receiver, and it was kind of like he was throwing the ball downfield to him, and that's what we love when they do it with Terry McLaurin. And my thinking, though, is with Eric Bieniemy there, the offense is going to be better, and the coaching staff has a lot to prove this year. Like, Bieniemy needs to prove that he could do it without Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. Ron Rivera needs to prove that he is worthy of getting another year as being the head coach there. Yeah. So if Sam Howell struggles, whether it be in camp or early in the season, it would not surprise me if we saw a move to Jacoby Brissett. And I think that reaches, it sounds terrible to say, like, Jacoby Brissett brings Terry McLaurin to a new level, but with the quarterbacks he's played with, I think that's the case. And with Jahan Dotson, I just think he's a really underrated wide receiver. Like, I think he's very good. Friend of the show, Matt Harmon, I know in Perception Reception.
He's a big Jahan Dotson guy.
Yeah, and we're talking wide receiver 3-4 territory. I'm all about the upside there. Give me Dotson over, you know, any of these of the much safer wide receivers. So that also kind of plays into it.
Yeah, I understand. I guess people are just concerned about the quarterback uncertainty there. I just still believe in the power of Terry McLaurin. So I would push him a little bit up my rankings too compared to where he is ADP wise. I'm looking at some of the guys around Jahan Dotson. He's going after Gabe Davis and Brandon Cooks. He's just ahead of Quentin Johnston, Zay Flowers, Michael Thomas. I don't know. I might put him up ahead of, say, a Gabe Davis, just because I feel like there's at least a little more consistency, perhaps, with Dotson there. I don't know. Maybe this is a situation where he's where he is because it's hard to figure out who you're moving around him. But it just feels like 42 feels a little bit low for me.
I have him at, way ahead of Gabe Davis. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to do the Gabe Davis thing again. In best ball, sure. In real life, it's going to be frustrating.
I mean, we spent all last summer arguing about Gabe Davis. I don't really want to go down that road again. Zay Flowers, wide receiver 44 by consensus, wide receiver 56 by your ranking. So you are a lot lower on Zay Flowers than a lot of other people. Is this just why? Because I don't know. Explain why. I'm not gonna put words in your mouth. Why do you have him lower?
I just am worried about how much volume he's gonna get. I think that Mark Andrews is the number one target. I think that Odell is going to be. While I don't love Odell for fantasy purposes, I think after the money that the Ravens invested in Odell, it tells us that they have big plans for this year for Odell. He got the most money of any wide receiver on a per year basis of the in this free agent class, when most of us did not think he was going to get anywhere close to the $18 million. And then I think Bateman is there, and Bateman will be playing ahead of Flowers early on. And while I said earlier I think the Ravens pass more, I still think they're going to run the ball a lot. So to me, I just have volume concerns for him. But now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, maybe I should bump Zay Flowers up a bit because I do like him as a talent.
Yeah, I think he's another hard one to figure out. I think the value of Zay Flowers is based heavily on how much you think Odell Beckham has left in the tank. If you think OBJ is washed, then I think you like Zay Flowers a whole lot more. If you believe that Beckham still has something left, then I think that sort of bumps Flowers down a little bit. I think that's the other part of it. Also, how many times will the Ravens have three receivers on the field? Because if it's just two receivers, it's probably going to be OBJ and a healthy Rashad Bateman more often than not. So that also sort of impacts it. This is not a team that has been, you know, they're not a wide open passing attack. I don't know that it just completely flips because Todd Monken is there this year. So I want to be optimistic about Zay Flowers, but I can also tell you a story where it just doesn't really work out quite that way this year. Let's get a couple tight ends before we get to the film festival. Darren Waller, consensus tight end 7. You got him at tight end 3. You have been very vocal about your love for Darren Waller so far this offseason.
I've always loved Waller as a talent, and the numbers last year, I know he missed time due to injury, but then when he was on the field, he's still just as good as most tight ends in this league. Obviously, Kelsey's 1. I still think Mark Andrews deserves to be 2. Like, to me, I then have these next 5 tight ends in like a big group of Waller, Hockenson, Kittle, Pitts, and Goddard. But my thinking was like, Hockenson has the number one target vacuum in the league opposite of him, and now they brought in Jordan Addison, so there's target comp there. George Kittle has Debo and Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey. Goddard has A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. Kyle Pitts has to deal with Arthur Smith. So I was like, which of these do I feel most confident in? Well, if healthy, we'll see the most volume, and for me, that's Darren Waller. I think he's going to be the Giants' number one pass catcher this year, their number one target. And I trust Brian Daboll to draw up plays that will put him in a position to succeed. But this is one of those instances where if you were like, I have Hockenson or Kittle or Pitts ahead of Waller, I'm not going to really argue too much.
I think that's sort of the thing, right? Because we all, I think, agree Travis Kelce is in a tier to himself. Mark Andrews probably has his own tier to himself, that second tier guy. But then you look, I mean, the Hockensons, Kittles, Pitts, Goddard, Waller, you could throw those names up in the air and whatever order they land in, you're like, okay,
exactly.
That very much works here. So I don't think it's completely crazy. It's just for now, it seems like Waller's at 7 for a lot of people. You got him at 3. He is, and we've talked about this on the show, he's probably the only Giant I have, at least pass catcher, that I have any real interest in drafting this year. A little bit further down the list, Juwan Johnson, tight end 17 by consensus. You got him at tight end 10. Again, this sort of feels like I think after you get past those top, you know, 7 or 8 tight ends, it's another handful of guys that you could probably just sprinkle in pretty much any direction at this point.
It is like we were talking before. I like David Njoku, so I have him ahead of him. I like Evan Ingram. I have him there. Then there's Gerald Everett, Chigakonko. For me, those 5 would be like the tier. After that, I think there might be a little bit of a drop off, but I think people are low-key sleeping on Juwan Johnson and just how good he was down the stretch. Like, there was a period where it was like, okay, he's either going to get you a touchdown or he's going to give you nothing. But then down the stretch, he was consistently seeing 5, 6, 7 targets per game. And then the Saints went out and traded Adam Trautman. They didn't sign a tight end. They didn't draft one. I think Juwan Johnson is going to be the third target in this offense behind Olave, Michael Thomas, depending on when we see Alvin Kamara return. But if Michael Thomas misses time again, then we're talking about him potentially being your number two target.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could see that happening. And again, I think when you're getting down that far in the tight end list, you just want somebody who could probably give you 6 to 8 points in a week. You just want somebody who's not going to be a zero. Maybe catch a touchdown, and you could feel okay with that. And Johnson, as you mentioned, was a guy who very much did that. And we've seen, now granted, Derek Carr had Darren Waller for a number of years, but he was not afraid to get his tight ends involved. Even when Waller wasn't there, we saw Foster Moreau getting involved in the Raider passing game. So Derek Carr not afraid to integrate his tight ends into what he's doing. Last one, Dalton Kincaid. Tight end 11 by consensus, tight end 17 on your rankings. I know you have concerns about the Bills getting two tight ends on the field. Is that why? Because you're a little bit lower on, I think, Dawson Knox, too, than a lot of people. Is it just about the Bills getting two tight ends on the field?
Yeah, like I'd rather Kincaid than Knox. But my thinking is this is going to be an offense, a philosophy shift from a now second-year play caller. The Bills last year ran the second fewest two tight end sets, and I know they keep saying they want to use Kincaid more as a slot receiver, which I love, and I think the upside to be a tight end one is there, but I don't love taking a rookie as a tight end one because I looked it up since 2000. There's like 6 rookie tight ends who have averaged double-digit fantasy points per game, which is pretty rough.
Yeah.
And then you add in that he's going to have to be – the offense is going to have to change to get him out there. Kincaid's going to have to do things a little bit differently than he's done it in college. And then what I think is 100% getting overlooked, the Bills tend to ease their rookies along. And Sean McDermott talks about the rookie wall more than any head coach that I've seen. And like, look at last year for an example. Kaiir Elam, their first pick, the cornerback, they were throwing out undrafted players over him because they were like, he's not ready. James Cook, we thought, okay, their second round pick, they're going to use him. He didn't really get going until late in the season. So part of me thinks that the Bills like to ease their rookies along. And I've heard some stuff that like, it's going to be different with Kincaid because he's a pass catcher that they know they need to get the ball to. But I like him a lot more as a tight end too. And maybe I have him a little bit too low, but I don't love taking him as a tight end one.
I think the consensus ADP is sort of based on a couple things. One, it is the excitement over what he can be, especially as a pass catcher. And again, at that point, you have reached just a glut of tight ends that can sort of be ordered in kind of any direction, any sort of way. So why not take the shot on the guy that we believe has the most upside? And I think that's where you sort of land with Dalton Kincaid at 11. I'm like, slick looking. He's going just behind Pat Freiermuth, ahead of Dalton Schultz, Chigakonko, Cole Kmet. So I can see why people would just be like, you know what? Out of all those guys, why not throw a dart
at Dalton Kincaid? Yeah, I can see that.
That's all. So that's kind of what I am imagining when people are sort of drafting here. There you go. That was a good slew of guys. And again, we'll do this a few more times. It's only May. We'll try to do this maybe once every few weeks and kind of take the pulse of the ADP world and you know what we think and how we feel about guys. Time now for the latest edition of Florio's Film Festival. And this week, we are watching Point Break, released in July of 1991. The reason I picked this movie, and we talked about this last week, coming out this week, is Fast X, the 10th in the Fast and Furious series. If you go all the way back to 2001, I think it was.
Yeah.
For the Fast and the Furious, 22 years ago, you had the Fast and the Furious. 10 years before that, you had Point Break. You just take out the cars, you insert surfing, and it's the same movie. The synopsis, a gang of bank robbers calling themselves the ex-presidents commit their crimes while wearing the masks of former U.S. presidents. The FBI believes that the members of the gang could be surfers and sends young agent Johnny Utah undercover at the beach to mix with the surfers and gather information. Utah meets surfer Bodie, gets drawn into the lifestyle of his new friend. Your takeaways. I kept telling you it's the same movie. Your takeaways from this.
And I've had friends before tell me that, like, you should watch Point Break. It's the exact same movie. And For the most part, it is. I felt like it was a little bit, like, Point Break was a little bit more focused on, like, him actually being an FBI agent, where, like, Fast and the Furious kind of quickly forgets that.
Brian O'Connor's a terrible cop.
Oh, awful.
He's a terrible cop.
Also, there's a big difference between letting, like, Vin Diesel completely get away and letting
Bodie
just be like, all right, you're going to go ride the wave and kill yourself. Like, they're two very different scenarios. But I really like the movie. I do want to say, I wish, like, you know, there's another dimension out there where Fast and the Furious didn't get all those sequels, but Point Break did. And, like, Patrick Swayze comes back. And what's the other actor?
Keanu Reeves?
Not Keanu Reeves. The two guy.
Oh, Gary Busey.
Gary Busey comes back, like, three movies later, and he's okay. Like, I would love to see that universe where that happens. But, yeah, it was a really good movie, really entertaining. And what I liked about it was the action was entertaining, but not, like, insanely over the top. And this is coming off of last week was Desperado, where we were saying, like, there was so much shooting that he was throwing bullets at one point. Like, that felt very unrealistic. This felt like, yeah, this could happen. And the ex-presidents is such a cool, like, gang of bank robbers.
Yeah.
And the way they refer to each other by name and they're in and out, like, it all seemed like, hey, this could easily happen.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, there's a little more realism to it than there was with Fast and the Furious, right? Yeah. I mean, like, Fast and the Furious is like, we're just going to show you beautiful people driving really fast, and, oh, by the way, they commit crimes while they're at it. Yeah, it you talk about there being a sequel. There was actually talk, and I think there was a script for a sequel, and for whatever reason, it just never materialized. It never got off the ground.
Was it someone, I don't know if it was Ryan, someone came in and was like, do not watch the second one. And I was like, oh, there's a second one? I didn't know.
Well, the second one, as in there was a remake, sort of reboot of it, but it was not an actual sequel. But yeah, the second one was trash.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of remakes. I think they usually ruin it when they try to do that. But, yeah, even, like, the one thing that made me laugh was I was like, all of these surfers and, like, they know who he is and they're like, oh, you Ohio State, like, we love football. I was like, that worked out pretty conveniently
for
him. Yeah,
you know, like, they're like, hey, Johnny Utah, you won the Rose Bowl. You beat SC, boo. but you beat SC in the Rose Bowl and you got your knee folded up and that was why you never went pro. Which also, you know, 1991, you have a major knee injury and he said he had 2 years worth of surgeries. Like, nowadays, you know, fast forward almost 30 years, right? Like, guys get their knees wrecked and they come back the next year because medicine has advanced.
That was one thing that I note when he was like, yeah, tore my ACL and that was it for me. I was like, oh man, you play 20 years too early because like, you would be back being the number one. Like, they said he was the Heisman winner or something.
He was like, he was all conference, which,
yeah, he'd be in the NFL in our world now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he'd have been CJ Stroud, you know, something like that at this point. Notes: Keanu Reeves practiced with the UCLA quarterback coaches to help him with the football scene. Also, not the last time he played a quarterback in a movie. He also was a former Ohio State quarterback in the movie The Replacements, which, in 2000.
I like The Replacements a lot, but I'm guessing in a fictional football world that Johnny Utah was the better player.
I think Johnny Utah was probably, Shane Falco obviously had the longer career because he never blew out his knee. He just was fixing boats or something, working at a dock when he got invited to play. But I think Johnny Utah probably would have had the better career had he not gotten hurt.
Johnny Utah also is insane.
Like, as the name?
Well, that's a great name.
Which apparently he loved Johnny Unitas and Joe Montana, and so that's how they came up with sort of Johnny Utah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That's a great football name. Mm-hmm. But he's just insane, and we were talking about it before the show. Jumps out of a plane with no parachute.
In his second time ever jumping out of a plane.
He does it without hesitation. Like, he's just like, oh man, now I got to do this.
With a gun in his hand.
The biggest gun shoot.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to shoot the gun out of the plane. I thought that was his plan when he like looks and then he just leaps. I was like, this guy is insane.
Speaking of which, Patrick Swayze apparently was an accomplished skydiver and he actually did the skydiving scenes himself. Cool.
I've never been, but I really want to go skydiving.
I had never really had any interest. I rewatched the movie for this, and I was like, you know, maybe that's a thing I try. Like, I never really had the idea of it, and like maybe just the adrenaline rush of watching this movie again.
I've always wanted to do it, and then like there was like one day where a friend of mine was like, "I'm going right now," and I was like, "No, I need to prepare for this. I'm not Johnny Utah. I can't just jump out of a plane at a moment's notice."
Also, for many of the surfing scenes, Patrick Swayze refused to use a stunt double since he never had one for fight scenes or car chases. So he did a lot of the surfing too. Shout out to Patrick Swayze for being all incredible in this. So does it hold up? Would you watch this movie again?
Yeah. Not only does it hold up, it's now we've watched a good amount of movies as part of the film series.
Yeah.
My top two continue to be Keanu Reeves movies. This might be number one. And then I liked Speed a lot as well.
Interesting.
But Point Break was fun. You know, like, the jumping out of a plane was like, oh my God. But besides that, it all seemed like very plausible and not like too over the top. And even probably more realistic than Fast One. Yeah, like where he just forgets that he's a cop and all that. And the other thing that's crazy about Fast is, like, I get that they're into cars. Why would all the other world-class criminals be that into street racing? But that's another conversation for another day. The fact, too, that he finds him in Australia and he tracks him down and he throws the mask in front of him. Yeah. I was like, that's such a cool scene. Yeah. Like,
I'll say this. The one thing I did laugh about rewatching it is that the FBI thought it was an absolutely ridiculous idea that a group of criminals in Los Angeles could possibly also be surfers. Like, why is this such a ridiculous, laughable idea that people in LA could possibly surf and do crime? Like, you could do anything and also be a surfer. Like, it's Los Angeles. This is what happens here.
The one question I had was, how does he get out of being, like, I understand that that he just kind of gets taken out of there, but like, he robbed a bank. That would probably hurt him a little bit.
Yes, I would think there would be some legal repercussions to him being involved materially in a bank robbery. I mean, you're on camera with a gun, like, in the middle of things.
I also thought it was bad planning on their part to be like, we know you're in the FBI and we're making you come rob this bank. You come along with us. You don't want to bring the cops with you on that trip.
Which everybody else in the gang was sort of the voice of reason on this. Or like, Bodie, we should probably just go now. And him being super zen and chill was like, no, man, like, being all spiritual, like, no, this is a game. Like, no, not really, because all of your guys got killed at the end of this.
That was the one thing watching it. I was like, if this happened in real life, they would have brought him into the van or wherever they were, and they would have just killed him.
Or like just dumped his body.
Yeah,
in the middle
exactly.
Of nowhere,
and they would not be like, this is fun. Let's have him know who we are and come after
us. Let's
go
skydiving with the cop that's trying to catch us.
Because if Bodie, listen, if you did what you had to do in that van, you get to surf that wave. You get to live the life that you wanted to live, because you probably get away with it.
Exactly.
He was the only one, him and Gary Busey were the only ones who knew who they were. Yep. And like, if they kill them both, then that's it.
That's the end. That would be completely the end. It's funny, though, because, you know, now that we mentioned here, there's two movies in which Keanu Reeves is a former Ohio State quarterback. I would love one day, maybe we should do this, is go through and do like a ranking of fictional football players.
Oh, we could definitely do that.
You know, you get Shane Falco and Johnny Utah and Willie Beeman, and I mean, we can just go on and
Paul
on down
Crewe
the list. Paul Crewe
is the first one I thought of.
Which Paul Crewe would it be for you?
For me, it's Adam Sandler. Okay. That's the one I grew up with.
Yeah, as opposed to the Burt Reynolds Paul Crewe. But yeah, we should actually put together a ranking of fictional football players, sort of thing.
Oh, I mean, there's just from those movies alone, because there's so many. Any the Icebox from Little Giants, I'd want to rank her up pretty high.
Yeah. Yeah, we could go on and on. I'm thinking of the program, and I can't think of the Joe Kane from the program.
Can we get? I know it's not a movie, but can Friday Night Lights qualify?
Sure, why not? We'll get the you know.
Oh yeah, well I'm thinking of the TV show,
the TV series, as opposed to the movie. I mean, the movie obviously the movie was based on a book. Based on a real school, and then they turned it into a TV show and fictionalized
which
the hell
out of
it.
Was great for like two or three seasons, and then fell off hard.
So there it is. So that's our Point Break recap. Next week, Con Air, because I think somehow we ended up with having a Con Air discussion.
Two questions.
Yes.
Keanu Reeves in it?
He is not, but Steve Buscemi is.
Okay.
I think that's how we talked about it, because Steve Buscemi and Danny Trejo, who were both in Desperado, are also both in Con Air.
Is it LA based?
No, actually, it does not. It does not involve it, but it does involve Nicolas Cage. So strap in.
There we
in.
Go. There's so many face-off memes that I now understand, by the way. And they're hilarious. But for so long, I didn't understand any of them.
See, this is also what we're going to do. We are educating young Florio on memes, too, now. There's going to be so many more memes that he's like, oh, I get it now, because he's seen the movies that they are attached to. By the way, not only is this Point Break, I mean, we love to talk about it because we were talking about it, but also it's sort of the swan song for our own Ryan Dennis. He's not leaving forever, at least hopefully not forever, but we are sending him out into the wilderness for 5 months because that's sort of what we do here. I don't know, it's like a real weird rite of initiation. You and I went through it.
A few times. It's fun if you know it's what you make it. You have plenty of time to watch all of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Watch all the Fast movies, go to the beach, enjoy your 5 months. Hopefully we'll see you back.
Become a surfer, Ryan. Avoid bank robbers.
Yes, avoid bank robbers. You know, shout out because Ryan not only helped us produce this podcast, did a great job. He was also the person who did a lot of the graphics. A lot of the Florio Film Festival graphics that you've seen with Mike's face, photoshopped in, that was all Ryan. So we appreciate all your hard work. Enjoy your time off, and hopefully we will see you back again. This is May, so I guess in time for like week six or seven or something,
or
like that.
You know, week one, let's just, if you're listening,
it'd be great management if you want to bring it back for week one.
The podcast can desperately use them,
or even the preseason, we would certainly,
or now
we'd appreciate all of that. But in the meantime, we still got plenty of people helping us out here. Well, Albert's gone too, so
the cast is getting smaller.
It's getting
smaller.
The Fellowship of the Ring is breaking up. It hurts my heart. But we still have plenty of people here.
We
to
lost
help us.
Randy to El Huddle.
I don't even want to talk about it. It's making me sad. No. It's making me totally sad. In the meantime, so I stopped being sad. Let's wrap this one up. We appreciate you hanging out with us as you always do on this show and putting up with our ridiculous movie talk at the end of each and every pod. That'll do it for this edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. Stay happy, safe, and healthy. Do good and live well. Enjoy the movies. Enjoy the weekend. And we'll talk to you next week.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.